Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I don't understand this. Spock's wasting time. Everybody else just sitting around. Somebody's got to do something.
Easy, Bailey.
What do they want from us? Let's find out what they want us
they
to
want
do.
They want us to lose our heads,
We've
Bailey,
only
now.
Got 8 minutes left.
7 minutes and 41 seconds.
He's doing a countdown.
Practically end of watch.
What are you all out of your minds? End of watch. It's the end of everything. What are you, robots? Wound up toy soldiers? Don't you know when you're dying? Watching regulations and orders. What do they mean?
Bailey, you're relieved.
What's that?
All right, okay. I'm clicking the button. We've started.
We started?
We've started.
All right.
Yeah.
I did it.
You did do it.
I did do
Dan
it.
Dan was complaining that we weren't starting.
Yeah.
And so we decided to start.
The music made it sound like we started.
The music did help make it start, and it also made me realize that Dan and I have done something similar.
Something silly?
No, not something silly. He was playing a musical sting that I suspect tickled him. I myself have recorded one or two musical stings that tickled me.
Yeah.
Did you record any additional musical stings, Dan, or was it mainly that that sort of rising action musical sting?
To answer your question, I have several musical stings.
All right, I've got this one. Well, hold off for a second, because like we'll see if there's an overlap.
Okay.
Okay. That's a good one. Yeah.
The TOS is usually pretty dependable for some like good isolated stings.
Yeah. And this is like classic, really like, well written, tightly written TOS.
And like here's one from another episode. Like that's just I can use
is
that.
Is that
so
TAS or TOS? I think that was TAS.
That might be.
Still
TAS,
counts.
They use,
same,
they
same
use
flavors.
It a lot in TAS.
Same flavors.
They may have used it in TOS.
Well,
I wonder if they have cross-used things.
Cross-used things. All right. Well,
cross-used.
We've started the podcast, but we have not identified the podcast.
Oh no!
As is required. Required by podcast law and custom.
It's Got Star Trek.
Thank you, Jesse. It is.
It's Got Star Trek.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 147, I think.
Yes, really? 247.
Oh, yes. Sorry, you're right. I got it totally wrong. Episode 247. I knew something was wrong about what I was
saying. Gentlemen, sit. Be comfortable. Everybody else just sitting around? Go ahead. Be seated. Let me show you my vessel.
All right, Dan's giving some previews of some of the themes that we pulled out.
But first, the Tranya.
Jesse and I have loaded up on Tranya ahead of this. Ahead of this particular episode. Okay.
I thought it was just Tang.
It's got what?
Tang. That was probably what the Tranya was probably just really Tang.
Like the asteroid juice? Astronaut juice.
You don't know what Tang is?
No, I know.
It's astronaut juice.
I know what Tang is.
What did you say? No, I said Tang. What? Look, what do you mean Tang?
Look, they used it and he was going to make a dirty joke.
Look, oh, buddy. Really? No, first of all, no. First of all, it was not.
Checkmate.
It was not a.
No, we don't usually say that on
quote unquote poon Tang. To use the colloquial term only to
it's
be
stated. Well, not a Poontang podcast.
No, you're damn right it's not. I wasn't thinking along those lines.
No, I never say that either.
though I was concerned that people would think I was thinking along those lines, but I wasn't. No,
probably both.
It was just a bit of a non sequitur to me because I was not associating Star Trek with the U.S. space program from the 1960s.
When interestingly, ironically, this episode predates it. Ironically, you should be able to easily associate it with that.
I don't know that that's ironic.
It is ironic.
I agree with the statement.
No, it is ironic because, like, of all the things that you don't make the connection between, it's ironic that something that is very connected, you didn't, like, you can find these connections between these distant points.
Yeah, they're more like a Navy than astronauts.
But ones that are right next to each other, you just can't identify. That's not a criticism of you. I'm just saying that's what makes it ironic.
Would you say that's a variation of not seeing the forest for the trees?
I guess.
I mean, I was asking that somewhat rhetorically. Because yes, of course it is. It's exactly the same thing. It's so close that you don't notice it.
No, seeing the forest.
So closely associated.
No, seeing the forest.
You don't see the forest because you're like surrounded by trees.
Hold on. Let me tell you how that's different. Seeing the forest for the trees, that's like saying, yeah, you don't realize you're in a forest because all you see are trees. You don't realize you don't see the big picture. Yeah. I wasn't saying big picture. I was just saying two things that are very closely related that you should have been able to associate more than other things. You actually found that to be more difficult. It's slightly different and very ironic.
You worded that. You found that to be slightly more difficult because you're stupid. Okay, let's get back on track here. It's got Star Trek, number 247.
Ooh, that's episodes.
Astute listeners will have guessed what we're talking about this week.
Wait, we're talking about
Corbomite maneuvers.
Oh,
yes. Except it's just maneuver, not
the Corbomite maneuver.
Corbomite maneuvers
from Star Trek TOS's very first season.
Which episode number is it?
10.
Or is it 11?
Unless it's 11.
In production, it was much earlier, and it was like the first one to have
McCoy and Uhura.
And Uhura and the Yeoman.
Yeoman Rand. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Is that your best recommendation?
And when you know that this is the first time you see, particularly McCoy, given how much he's given here and how clearly they're demonstrating that he and Kirk have a long relationship of some sort.
I never said that.
Yeah.
I thought McCoy did a great job. Yeah. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Here we are.
We're talking about this episode, and that's silly. Everyone knows like on a podcast, you're not supposed to talk about the topic that you're promising to talk about.
Stardom ups.
Until much later.
I see.
Podcast listeners hate it when you get right to the topic at hand that's in the title.
Affirmative.
They don't like that.
You're just making jokes.
No, it's for real.
You gotta jingle and jangle.
User surveys, and they're like, we get so fucking pissed off when people are just like, hello, welcome, and here's the discussion you were learning.
Yeah, because...
it's blocking the way.
Because people are paying money to just hear that us sort of jingling and jangling.
What's funny about that is that reality... what is it? It's something versus what's true, what's presented versus what's
Jesse,
true.
Jesse, what's this guy on about?
Well, if you let me fucking finish my sentence, I'll fucking tell you what I'm on about. What I'm on about.
Right, Jesse, imitating art.
Jesse, what I'm on about.
I'm going to rely on your help to figure out what's going on here.
Okay, this is like, this is really, halfway through my sentence, you're like, oh, I'm so confused. What are you talking about? I'm so confused. Oh my God, what are you even? It's like, okay, if you let me, put those few more words in, it all comes together in the end. All comes together.
I'm
in
looking
the end.
Forward to these extra words.
I don't think they're extra. We just haven't heard.
They were just words that present convey a thought.
All right.
And when you take something out of context, it can have vastly different meanings. So,
as we just determined from the prior conversation about about the astronauts and the Tang. Okay. Anyway, you were saying.
I don't even remember what I was saying. What were we talking about?
Asteroid juice.
No, that was from before. Star Trek TOS.
Is it episode 10 or is it episode 11?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a good question.
I think it's 10.
I go with 10. I think I'm a 10.
Oh, no,
it's
10.
It counts it as 11 if they count the cage.
I remember what I was going to say, because you were saying, like, people don't like it when you start right away with your topic.
Yes.
And I was saying that's
silly humor.
You're using silly humor. You're presenting a scenario, and I'm comparing that versus what the reality is. Yeah. And the reality is different from what you're stating.
It is,
and that's why
it's
funny.
Which is, yeah, exactly. That's often the basis of humor. And it will endear us to a certain segment of the audience. The segment that we probably most get along with. So, you know, we're sorry for the rest of y'all. What are we supposed to do, you know?
I hope you relish it as much as I.
Okay.
Sustain some hate mail.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of mail.
Corbomite maneuver. We will be getting to that shortly.
Corbomite maneuvers.
Corbomite maneuver. But first, we have a couple of voicemails. And so let's get right to those.
But not hate mail.
So then we can start talking about the old...
Jeez-o flip.
Corbomite maneuver.
However, it was well played.
Our first voicemail is from regular contributor Grayson.
Hi, Grayson.
Hey, guys. First of all, let me apologize in advance for any loud airplane noises. I am walking.
Oh, you are not forgiven.
To my car from my office, which is very near.
We have to hear the airplane first before we forget.
International spaceport, and there may be some inadvertent jet engine sounds. I don't have a question about the Corbomite maneuver.
Airport.
Looking forward to your discussion.
So are we.
I do have a question about another Star Trek topic, which is Prodigy.
Prodigy.
Y'all have made no mention.
There's the airplane.
Of Prodigy.
He's got jets in both pockets.
And I'm just curious.
I think it's just an audio clipping.
There will be It's Got Prodigy.
Yeah.
In the future. Or if it doesn't have Prodigy. does it have Prodigy?
Oh, it will.
I'm just...
it has
just,
a little bit. We have a little bit of Prodigy.
If it'll have Prodigy, I guess, is my question. Other than that, I hope y'all have a great day or night. You. And I hope you had a good 4th. I hope you still have all your fingers.
And I know.
Totally.
It's on the rad.
It is on the rad.
It is.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Agamus.
Maybe we should start doing Prodigy.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So, first of all, thank you so much, Grayson. Great question. And he has, you're
interesting
using
sounds.
Dan's slogan on the rad, which I still remain uncomfortable with, but the overwhelming response from the audience is that the saying on the rad is cool. So,
there was like,
thank you.
It was like an interesting sort of beat he had. Like,
thank you.
That rattly noise.
It wasn't a rattly noise. It was a rattly noise.
It was rattly and rad.
Rattly and rattly. Oh,
I can't believe we haven't said on the rad in a while. If he hadn't mentioned that, it would have. I'm sorry, Patrick. It might have
gone linguistically extinct.
It would. Yeah, and but now that he brought it up, it's back. We're back, baby.
We're back on the rad.
I know. And then
much of Patrick's chagrin.
Jesse used to be on my side. Jesse was like, "Fuck it, I'll just go along with it."
I like the rad.
Jesus fucking Christ.
That was like
God.
The worst sound. Like,
it was really bad.
In that episode. That was
captured it so well. Okay.
Awful.
So getting to Grayson's question, because it's a good one. We did cover, I think, the first couple episodes of Prodigy.
We did one episode.
Yeah, right when the pilot first came out.
What's a pilot? But it's so serial.
First of all, it is so serial. I don't know how much of you all watched of Prodigy. I've watched the whole first season and I loved it.
I haven't seen it. I should watch it.
You haven't. Jesse hasn't seen it.
I haven't finished the first season yet either.
Dan hasn't finished
I'll
the
watch
first
you
season.
Watch
but it's
watch
good.
It.
Oh, will you?
So we are pro Prodigy. We are into all of us.
Is that
to,
a promise or,
to
promise or
degrees.
Threat?
No promise on Jesse here, of course. But we do dig Prodigy, and we do want to cover it, and we were trying to figure out the best way to do that, partly because we have to catch up a little bit, as you can tell. Mm-hmm. Some of us have to catch up on season one, but also...
First we must turd, then we have to catch up.
Dude.
Season two was released all at once on Netflix, so that, of course, complicates exactly how are you going to cover it, podcast style, et cetera, or regular format, all that other jazz, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. However, we were thinking that what we might do is do what we've been doing with Star Trek TAS, a.k.a. the animated series, wherein we've done that series in order from episode one, two episodes at a time.
I don't understand this.
I think it's pretty straightforward. And we are down to only one episode left. We have one episode left of TAS. And so we'll cover that one soon and do a little bit of a retrospective on TAS. And then I think after that, we'll start covering, maybe even right from the beginning, we'll start covering Prodigy. Periodically, we'll do two episodes at a time.
Periodically,
in order. We'll build up a little library of Prodigy action there, because it definitely deserves being discussed. And it's I hear that the second season is fucking blown it out the park. So
it gives me emotional security.
Yes,
that seems to be what the internet is pushing.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited to watch the second season. Maybe I'll watch it this holiday weekend.
All right.
All right. So that's that. Thank you very much, Grayson. As you.
Affirmative.
Okay. Next, second and final voicemail is from Isaac.
Hi, Isaac.
Hey, guys. Isaac from Tasmania here with another voicemail. It is really cold here. There's actually snow on the mountain.
What?
You know the one.
It's winter
there. Anyway, pretty cold. But your podcast is warming me up. It was nice to have you back this week, Patrick. Did you know that Dan and Jesse called you a dingus last week?
Oh, my gosh. This was our secret.
So I just thought I'd mention that.
Blabbermouth.
Interesting, guys. You referred to multiple dinguses as dinguses and not dingai. Yeah. So
I said dingus-i.
Of a worthy of a chat.
Extra wrong.
What is the plural for dingus? I also was glad that the three of you identified as dingus. I think it's true. You're not wieners. also,
that was the Marinos last week, which wieners and
made me think, because it kind of rhymes with the neutrinos, who are the dinguses that hang around with the Ninja Turtles from Dimension X, and they are dinguses.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the neutrinos.
Wondering what you thought of the neutrinos. And also, while I'm on the subject, I was wondering if you ever considered in the theme song of the Ninja Turtles, if they say Raphael was cool but rude.
Oh, no.
Potentially that they might say Raphael was cool but crude.
Just fucking with us.
Keep up the good work. My 90 seconds is up. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Isaac.
Thank you.
Oh boy, we get a tie-up April. I love being a bad guy.
Oh man.
Thank you very
That was a non sequitur, of course. That was Rocksteady. Or Bebop, I can't remember, one of them tying up April O'Neil. He was, Isaac was referring to the neutrinos from TMNT.
I think the whole thing with the neutrinos is you're not supposed to give a shit about them because that's the deal with neutrinos in general, right?
Yeah, but how could you not give a shit about them because you've seen, you remember what they look like with their silly hair?
Yeah, but I mean, they're named after something that is supposed to be super like light and
yeah, but I'm sure the people that named the neutrinos did not understand the physical properties of an actual neutrino.
Oh, okay, so how they
very weakly almost don't interact at all with regular matter, and so they're just flying through us billions at a time.
I think
quark didn't
they're
look
wearing
like quark,
yellow future suits, and they have like weird,
I bet
weird
you,
fucking
I,
hair.
I bet
hair
you the people who
pieces.
Invented the neutrinos had some knowledge of like the actual neutrinos because
I think they just thought it sounded
because
cool.
They were like, they were kind of slight. They're these small punk.
It sounds cool.
They're kind of these small punk rockers in this big world.
The
that
girl has the swirly hair on the forehead.
Wait! I'm talking
forehead.
About why they're neutrinos. You're okay. Not guys aren't
punk,
talking about
punk
that.
Rockers.
Because they're sort of like these small creatures like in this great world that doesn't give a shit about them, but they're just trying to get by and do what they can.
Sounds like you're pro neutrino.
Well, it just
sounds like I'm pro neutrino.
I think, but like, and then the whole deal about them is like the whole world has forgotten and lost them because it doesn't care about them. So I think it is kind of like an actual neutrino.
I don't remember the deal with them, but I looked up pictures of them and I remembered when I saw the picture, I had a visceral reaction from my youth.
I don't know what
that I hated these people and found them aggravating.
Is it from the cartoon?
It's from the cartoon, the neutrinos. They came from Dimension X.
They're underdogs. You're supposed to be on their side because they're underdogs.
I don't go with
just
every single
like,
underdog.
Just like your real life neutrino isn't the underdog of the cells.
Generic underdog, I'm in favor of that. But if it's like a really aggravating underdog.
What do you think about a neutrino being the underdog of the cells?
But it's not a cell. It's
or whatever
a particle.
It is.
You mean
particle.
Particles?
Yeah, particles. Sorry. Particles. Same shit. So it's not the same shit.
So it's just like, I'll see you later. Protons and neutrons, quarks, leptons, gluons, all that business.
Quark wasn't like a quark.
Quark!
Of the particles.
Yeah.
Particles.
I don't really know what I'm
Particle man.
About.
Okay.
Subatomic particles. They're called ghost particles because they barely interact with anything else.
All right. Thank you, Isaac. I think we answered some questions you might have had in there.
Oh, he had another question about
what was it about?
He had a few questions. One of them was about cool but rude. But he actually had a question. He had another question before near the beginning.
I don't think so.
Yeah, he did. He said was saying something that we were supposed to respond to. Oh yeah, dingus. He was asking why.
What the plural of dingus?
Actually, when Patrick was gone, I said I didn't say dinguses or dingi. I said dingusi.
Yeah.
And then Jesse said something about the dingus ate your baby.
Well,
last week, I think at one point I might have also said dinguses. I said both dinguses and dingusi. I never said dingi, but I believe it's dingusi. So neither of what Isaac said.
So I know how to resolve. Word. I know how to resolve Dengue. The question. I know the mechanism for resolving the question, but I don't have the knowledge. Virus. I don't have the knowledge, the information to resolve the question. It all depends on whether dingus is derived from the Latin, the Greek, or a different language.
Right.
Because, you know, that depends on how you pluralize things, right?
Okay.
In English. Right. It's
not always Latin.
Yeah, it's not always Latin. Sometimes it's Greek. Sometimes it's some crazy other language.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe it. It's wild.
Do you guys ever get some shit where you're like, where fingerprint scanners won't recognize your finger because they're too dry?
No, we're human beings.
Like, we don't work for the government.
We're
human beings.
Sometimes my fingerprint scanner doesn't work, so I have to like go.
Fingerprint scanner?
No, I got the opposite problem.
I have to blow hot, moist air onto my fingers. Otherwise, and I'm getting the same problem right now with my fucking trackpad. It's like not. Does either of you ever had a trackpad not?
No.
I have to manually type the price of something into a cash register. There's not even a scanner.
That has nothing to. That is absolutely nothing to
I'm
do with
saying,
what we're talking
I'm
about.
I'm saying like fingerprint
Dan, he's
scanner.
Trying to, he's trying to participate. In the conversation,
but you're talking.
I'm low tech, man.
But you're talking about scanning things like items. That,
Dan, he just wants to be. Part
we're
of
talking
the
about the interaction of fingers with touch things.
Dan, he's doing like the best he can.
and he's crumpling away at some bag of nuts. He just doesn't care.
Well, you know. Thank you. Let's get to this episode. This is so silly.
So like my fingers aren't recognized. Like it used to just be fingerprint scanners, but now it's carried over to trackpads.
I've had that happen when it's too humid. So I've had the opposite problem.
Maybe
moist,
it's too
moist
humid.
Fingers.
Maybe that's the problem.
Making my.
Maybe the problem I'm having with the trackpad is totally different from my problem with fingerprint scanners. Maybe it's the opposite problem.
Audience, write in at feedback@StarTrek.com if you have any life pro tips when it comes to withered fingers.
Because in order to get the finger
not working on fingerprint scanner.
Because in order the fingerprint scanner to work, I have to make it hot and moist. But like with this, I'm
audience,
saying
Dan is shoving his finger repeatedly
but Patrick,
into his mouth.
Patrick, what Patrick
demonstrate.
Is saying is
it's
that
hot and moist.
Patrick is saying that hot and moist is actually the hit problem he gets. Is the trackpad doesn't recognize your fingers when they're
when
too moist.
When it's humid. Outside.
Okay, so they're probably opposite
or if I
problems.
Come back from the swimming hole.
The
if
hole
I've been at the swimming hole, sometimes my fingers do not work in the. In the fingerprint scanner. Okay.
Because they're all wrinkly.
That's been It's Got Fingerprint Scanners. This is It's Got Star Trek. And we will now continue our conversation, kind of really start our conversation about the Corbomite maneuver. And I'll start it first by saying...
Nobody's commenting on what this guy's saying.
This is an awesome episode.
Nobody's commenting on my sound effect.
Which sound effect are you talking about?
Fuck you.
I mean, you know... What am I supposed to do?
I don't know
do
what he's
that?
Saying.
Fuck you.
Is he saying like fuck you? Is that what you think he's saying?
Fuck you.
There's some stuff in this episode. I actually have a sound clip. It was a rare moment where I was like, in addition to the music clips, I actually had to pull a sound clip because it's so important that we bring it up that in the event you didn't have it for some reason, I needed to have it, so I pulled it as well.
Well, this sound
fuck you.
Is actually part of this.
We make assumption you have a deity.
Yeah.
Or deities. Or some such beliefs which comfort you.
Comfort you. But it sounds like he's saying fuck you, doesn't it?
Fuck you.
Pretty much. No.
Yeah.
So you get 10 minutes.
It does. All right.
10 minutes of what?
Didn't he give him 10 minutes?
Yeah, he gave him 10 Earth minutes.
Yeah.
Earth was it no Earth time units?
Called
which you,
minutes,
which you call minutes. Man, the 60s were wild when it came to like aliens talking.
We therefore grant you 10 Earth time periods known as minutes.
So, what I was trying to get at is that just
to
preface our discussion of this episode.
Oh, about it being a good episode?
It
was a good episode.
It's a classic for a reason. And it's just so tightly written
I mean
the plot structure is a very tight, straightforward plot structure.
Yeah, but I was saying
it's still a good mystery.
There was a lot of like Okay, there was a lot of sort of like sitting and looking and waiting. And I know, wait, well, let me finish. I understand that that is put there to add tension to it. And that's what it does. It very successfully adds tension. Sometimes I feel like it's an ink too long, but like, yes.
An ink? Is that just an earth unit of time?
It's just an ink, a hair bit. It's a hair bit too long.
A hair bit.
It's a hair bit.
Okay,
it's just an ink too long.
All right,
but it does successfully. But that doesn't ruin the fact that it's very effective in its usage of tension by like waiting around.
Here's the point I'd like to make. It's very similar, slightly askew of that
view
point.
Askew.
So the writing in this episode is taut. It is very well structured. But what really impresses me is that there's all this character work, which you were hinting at with the saying, you know, helps build tension. But not just tension. There's all this funny character stuff. Scotty is saying funny things. McCoy is saying, like, there's just this cute stuff. Sulu making comments about, like, you know, battle brains with Spock or whatever he said. You know, he's talking about you what did he say? You slap brains.
You try to cross brains with Spock. Cut you to pieces every time.
Cross brains. But. Every single one of those things, in addition to being a true character moment, character building moment for that character, it also always directly connected to the plot, partly for building tension, but also for like setting the stage for what was going on, you know, for this whole thing that was going to simmer over into this, you know, this whole bluffing thing that, you know, spoiler alert, that Kirk does at the end. Well, so I was just very impressed with how well all the, like, there wasn't anything superfluous.
What about when Kirk was talking about like the score they were getting, he was like, they're getting like 94 and then like when they get like 100% and he's like, what are you going to do with that extra 6% or whatever? And
he's
that's, like, I was like, I'm tell you what,
that's the line. That's the line. Do you have it, Dan? Do you have that line?
Which line?
The 6% line.
What are you gonna do with that 6% when they give it to you, Jim?
That, but do you have what Kirk says?
Oh, what did Kirk say before that?
Okay, no. Here, let me play it because I got.
No,
it.
I might actually.
Let
have
me
it.
Let me play it. Let me play it because this is. I wanted to ask you both a question. That's the line. Here's the line.
What are you gonna do with that 6% when they give it to you, Jim?
I'm gonna take it. And I'm going to...
That's when Yeoman Rand comes in and with a bunch of bullshit food. We'll get to that in a second. Was Kirk about to say, I'm going to take that 6%?
Green leaves?
Was he going to say, I'm going to take that 6% and shove it up your ass? Listen. That's the implication, right? This is 1966. It's Star Trek.
I think so.
Episode 10. Listen to this.
What are you going to do with that 6% when they give it to you, Jim?
I'm going to take it. And I'm gonna.
That was like
comical interruption of the door,
and that was supposed to act as like the sensor noise, like the beep. They had the door in place of like the cursor.
Kirk was like, "I'm gonna take that 6% of effort, that 6% of effort from my fucking entire crew, and shove it up your ass."
Green leaves.
And then Yeoman Rand brings him some fucking nonsense.
And then there was that weird line about like how they got to warn me next time they hire another female yeoman.
Yeah. it was a rare time that you saw some like Captain Pike was openly sexist in the cage, mm-hmm. where he was like, everyone was like blown away that they had a female first officer. But you didn't see it as much on TOS.
Well, you were talking about Scotty, who was like...
You have an annoying fascination for timepieces, Mr. Sulu.
And I was going to say something similar to you, Patrick, where there was a lot of character-building dialogue, except I don't always agree that it fully worked itself into the plot. It usually did. But, like, there was... Okay, for a brief moment, because it got to be so intense that for a brief moment, I thought this was, like, going to be an episode where some weird Ray turns everybody into, like, an asshole or something. Yeah. Because when they were...
It's like, what happens in the future? Do we turn into, are we assholes or something?
Those your kids.
Those your kids, Marty.
So it was like, granted, they were just about to die, but like Scotty was like shitting all over Sulu's counting. It was funny because Sulu kept counting, and he even like referenced.
Well, that's why I liked Scotty's line. Like, I know it's partly exposition, but it justifies the fact that Sulu is aggravating everybody with like this is all like this whole countdown.
And then Sulu even recognizes it.
If anyone's interested, 30 seconds.
But it wasn't just Scotty. Kirk sort of shat on Spock too when they were talking about chess.
Checkmate.
And then Kirk says,
"Yeah,
is that your best recommendation?"
Yeah, and then
Spock was all sheepish.
Yeah, Spock was all sheepish. So it was really weird that first of all, like, Kirk just like totally like lashed out at Spock. Spock was weirdly sheepish, which was interesting. And then also Kirk and McCoy decided to have the most inane argument 10 seconds away from dying.
Yeah.
Like McCoy's like, you went a little rough on him, Jim. You know, like I'm gonna put in his report.
They're all upset.
I'm gonna put in his report that was your fault. But like the point is they're about to die, yeah, and they're arguing about this shit right now. Like,
and Kirk comically diffuses that by saying, "Let's hope we're still alive to argue about it in a few minutes or whatever." Right.
Anytime you can bluff me, Doctor. 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 Anytime you can bluff me, Doctor.
I like that one. That's fun.
That was a mix of this one.
Anytime you can bluff me, Doctor.
And this one.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, we gotta get some funky beats in there. Maybe a couple other things, change it up a bit. That's good. one more point before the break.
Okay. Well, I was gonna
squeeze it in.
So I was just sort of summarizing that, like,
the timeline is counting down to the break.
There were like three separate arguments, like back to back, right next to each other, which I enjoyed as like character interaction, yeah, and you're learning about the characters and stuff. But it did almost for me for a minute feel like that had something to do with the plot. But it really freaking out.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was a tense situation. What are you gonna do?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just kind of funny. Like, I don't know. In Star Trek, I don't ever remember often seeing people freaking out at each other, like whole entire bridges freaking out at each other. Yeah. Maybe if it's like a one-on-one episode where they're stuck in a shuttle together and they're freezing and dying. Totally. But if it's like a whole bridge crew of people, like, you don't see it, everything just break down like that usually in Star Trek. Yeah. But
although it didn't totally break down, I think that was partly what we're supposed to see. These are professionals getting to their breaking point. Some of them actually break, like Lieutenant or Ensign Hilarious Man.
Out, toy soldiers! Why are you dying?
Was he a lieutenant or ensign? I don't know.
He was a lieutenant.
Lieutenant, okay. Lieutenant Bailey.
Let's find out what they want us
they
to
want
do.
They want us to lose our heads.
it seems like a total lame-o. And I
watching regulations and orders. What do they mean?
And we will discuss. We will discuss.
He's like Pharaoh.
We will discuss Lieutenant Bailey and play many of his sound clips when we return from the break, which will be
the end of everything. What are you, robots?
In just a moment. Be right back. Okay, we have returned.
I wanted to mention.
We return from break. Dan is mentioning something.
Skip back to what we were talking about before. I initially said something about how there was a lot of waiting. There was like whenever there was a cube scene, like especially with the music, it was just them sort of staring at the cube. Yep. The scene where they're trying to get away from the cube, trying to sheer off to the side. It was like, it's funny. It took like forever and we're staring at this cube get like more spinnier and fuzzier.
Yeah.
And then when they're being towed by the little bubble shuttle, that's like they're staring at it forever. And it has that music that's like. Yeah. And then when they're setting up for the right angle shear, they're
still
like.
Coming toward us.
Is that's like the hairy shear.
That's the. That's like they're watching. The levels go up. The coolant temp primary manifolds are superheating. Then they're watching some more. Then there's people falling. Then there's crew vibrating. And then watching and falling, and watching. And then there's about 3 minutes of real time of waiting and watching between all these different like events until finally Kirk issues the command to sheer off. And then there's like another 30 seconds after that of waiting before they actually do it. It went on for minutes how long they were just staring and waiting for shit to happen. Like I said, what I was saying is it was great because it built up tension, but kind of like when we mentioned once with Spectre of the Gun, how at the end there was a scene where there was a showdown, they were walking towards each other.
Yeah, it was
and
like
you're
a
talking
long
about
time.
How they stretch that out. Yeah. I felt it slightly stretched out.
It
felt
like 54 minutes per episode.
So the good thing is it didn't bore me, but like I found the whole episode pretty fascinating.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I kind of enjoy the slowed down. It didn't bother me in this episode, Inspector of the Gun. There's some episodes where like it's a little bit more jarring or out there. For me, it worked in this episode because they were playing up the whole people trapped on a submarine.
Yeah, it was like in battle.
They don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like, what's going on? What's going to happen next? What's our next move? And they're all like, you know, tensions boiling over.
And you were talking about some of the side. There was a lot of side dialogue. That happened in this episode that, like you said, was building sort of building our understanding of the characters, because this was still only the first season, the 10th episode, and it was the first, and you were saying it was like one of the first episodes.
It was produced earlier than it aired.
Yeah. So like Kirk gets, well, I've got like 10 of these things, so we can either,
I like a list.
Okay,
we'll talk about Lieutenant Bailey another time,
because like I have a list about Lieutenant Bailey, but I don't really have to go through that because that's mostly just quotes. But so like,
what's a list of that you're going through now?
Interesting side dialogue that didn't necessarily directly relate to what was going on.
Good.
First, I have when Kirk gets annoyed at McCoy for not telling him about the warning lights during his physical.
I was getting a little upset at McCoy. I was like, dude, the lights was fucking flashing.
Yeah,
I was like, what's going on
here? Yeah, and it was funny because he was just like, he like totally got pissed off at him, and it had the classic Atari boops. Yeah. So then later, then there was McCoy was like,
is this the right time to comment about Kirk's smooth nipples and having his shirt off?
It was weird. He was walking around the whole ship with his shirt off.
He didn't put it
back on when he left.
He had a towel around his shoulders, and then he just flopped his uniform around his shoulders, walked around with his smooth, clean shaved nipples and chest.
And then they had that upside down Stairmaster that was built into the wall as part of the wall. That's what I was talking about. Yeah. How the Enterprise is not reparable because they have these like because that device right there, that upside down wall step machine, that was not like modular. That was built into the wall. How do you repair that when it breaks?
I don't think you have enough evidence to say it was not modular.
Why didn't they just have a machine?
From the angle of the shot.
That's a machine.
Why didn't they have to have it in the wall? And you couldn't adjust it. So
it
everyone,
was
had,
close to the
everyone
computer.
Had to be the same height to use it, or you needed an adjustable table. They should have made it adjustable.
Starfleet.
They should have made it adjust. What does that have to do with anything?
You gotta you have to meet certain requirements.
People are different heights. You're trying to tell me that Deanna Troi is the same height as William T. Riker?
That's later on, dude. They didn't have that shit.
This guy. I'm looking at Patrick and pointing at Jesse.
I'm looking at both of you motherfuckers. keep doing this. This is a good show.
Dingus.
I'm enjoying
You're the dingus.
Dingai.
Dingus.
Hey. Couple of dingai.
Dingai. Sinister Cube. Did you? Your list of stuff. I interrupted just because it was a naked Kirk and it was hilarious.
Yeah,
because it's all sexy.
No, it was good.
Sexy Slurpee.
That's
naked.
That's worth interrupting over.
Pokey nipple Kirk.
So then there was the point where McCoy then for some reason started talking to himself because he gave this line.
What am I, a doctor or a moon shuttle conductor?
Yes. I like he's like, a moon shuttle
conductor. Which is in production language or production series order. I think that's the first time he uses that.
Yeah.
Does he sound like he's kind of drunk when he says it?
What am I, a doctor or a moon shuttle?
He's usually
kind
of drunk.
I'm going to take that 6% and shove it up your Georgian ass.
Some kind of a moon shuttle conductor.
And then what is he? But doesn't he talk about not talking to himself or something? Doesn't he have some line?
Yeah,
about
I know. That was getting
but
to
he's
that.
Like talking
oh
to
my
himself.
God, we're doing the thing where we're
sorry,
all talking
I'm
at
sorry.
The same time.
No, we're not.
At one point, I think all three of us were talking at the exact same time.
Okay. We'll,
it's magic.
It's we'll madness, go. Is what it is.
In order. All right.
I jumped every time a light came on around here. I'd end up talking to myself.
That was
really funny.
That was a funny line. Three of the Kirk saying the mission of the Enterprise is to seek out and contact alien life. And then Spock gets all pissy. He's like, has it ever occurred to you that there's a certain inefficiency? I was curious to see how wait a second. I just copied that wrong.
Yeah, you just skipped a line.
I just skipped a total.
There's a certain inefficiency in asking me questions about something upon which you've already decided or something along those lines.
It was.
I got it pretty close.
I
got it pretty close.
And
then Kirk is like, you dumbass. I'm bouncing ideas off of
this,
you dumbass.
It's this one.
Has it occurred to you that there's a certain inefficiency and constantly questioning me on things you've already made up your mind about?
Spock was talking back to him in there. So in the lift, by the way, do they call them turbo lifts or do they just call them lifts?
A turbo lift.
I thought you were using sort of like a Britishism.
No, I wasn't.
Calling it a lift.
Elevator.
Do you refer to it as a flat or an apartment?
You know what I call it, and I know what you call it.
But you're still being coy about it.
Well, it's because what do you think? I think the world can take a guess that most people in the U.S., what they're going to call between those two words.
But what about those of us who are pretentious?
Do you have bags of crisps? At your
house? They don't need to be spoken for. They can live in their own world.
You got bags of crisps at your house, don't you?
No, I don't. Oh. I don't. Oh, I do sad. Have. I do.
I bet his. I bet this motherfucker.
You've got fizzy drinks.
I've got chips.
No, you have fizzy drinks.
This motherfucker's boot is filled with crisps.
You've got
vision. So in the lift,
the boot of his lorry is filled with
crisps.
Did
you notice that the lift had a one handle to hold on that was jutting out of the thing?
They've always got that, and you squeeze it a little and you wiggle it.
But they should have a bar so more than one person can hold on. This is like one thing that one person can hold on.
You only need
the
one person to, because it senses where you want to go by your grip.
They got another one.
By your grip.
But where do the other people hold?
What do
the other people hold?
You take it in turns to grip the thing.
What do the other people hold?
I'm telling you, the people take it in turns.
You only need one guy to hold it.
The thing is not
the, no, it's the whole point of the grip is to keep you from falling.
No,
so how do they keep from falling?
No, it's not. It's so you can grab it and tell it where you want to go.
That's not true.
It's not true. It's a stable device. Lift is a stable device. They're not bouncing around.
Negative. No,
it's not zooming around like Discovery style, like crazy. It's a perfectly reasonable turbo lift. So clearly the way it operates on TOS, everybody knows this, is you gently grasp the little dangly thing, and depending on the pressures you put on the squeezing. On the squeezings and the rotations.
Quite the contrary.
It tells you, you're telling it where it go. You squeeze it and you're like, please take me.
Right.
It's like, Dan.
You yank the crank.
If I were to come to you, okay. You're in your car.
I get what you're saying. It doesn't
give
require
you a little,
any more
a squeeze,
explanation.
And I'd be like,
I know what you're saying, and I'm saying you're wrong.
Take me to the 7-Eleven. I need Red Bulls.
I don't think it's like that.
Obviously the product of a primitive and savage civilization.
I need some gummy bears and Red Bulls. I'll give you a little rotation.
By the way, in the lift, what I was really getting at, Bones was all talking back to Kirk about promoting Bailey too fast. But then we find out because it's reminiscent of Kirk 11 years ago. So that was just some kind of character dialogue.
Yeah.
Kirk
was like, I used to be a lame piece of shit too.
I had a brother.
It kind of shows us that Kirk's relationship with Bailey, Kirk can really lay down the law when he needs to, but then when he's with his friend like Bones, it's like they can chum around. So we find out for some reason that Bones waits for the crew to eat before he does eats for some reason.
I don't think that's for real. I think
he was just talking shit.
Well, he wasn't going to eat the salad. Kirk was trying to
he was just talking shit.
Kirk was like, you should dig into this bullshit with me because you're making me eat this bullshit because you call me fucking fat.
Leaves.
Scotty
Shatner probably insisted on having his shirt off at the beginning of the episode because he knew there was a line in it where McCoy was calling him fat. McCoy was like,
"It's blocking the way."
So Shatner was probably like, "Yeah, you're gonna show me with my shirt off so you can see how Canadian bacon lean I am."
It's coming at light speed.
I get what you did there. That took me a second. Very clever, Dan.
I already went over how Scotty was annoyed with Sulu for giving the countdown, which was kind of Sulu's job, you know. So it was it was weird, and that also had the double thing of it made it seem like they were hit with an asshole ray. I'm on number 7 now.
You didn't tell us how many were total.
I did.
Oh,
there's
how
10.
Many? 10.
All 100.
Right. Oh,
that's 1,000.
1,000.
1,000. What are you talking about, man? You're using all sorts of odd verbal
constructions. No time for you, your theories, your quaint philosophies.
Quaint philosophies.
I already mentioned
indeed.
The one about Spurk. Spurk and cock. Spurk and cock.
You know, Spurk is one of the commonly accepted / fiction names for Kirk and Spock making love together. It's called Spurk.
Negative?
No, it is. Spurk. I know you were misspeaking, Dan, comically.
We grow annoyed at your foolishness.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be...
Your intention is not peaceful.
Those are both going to be keepers, I think.
But, which one?
We grow annoyed at your foolishness.
And then the one afterwards? Your intention is not peaceful.
Both of those will be useful.
Yeah. I should save him best of. I already mentioned how Kirk says there's got to be something we can do, and Spock's like, in chess, when someone's outmatched, the game is over. Checkmate. And he's like, is that your best recommendation? He's like, you can regret. I can find no other logical alternative.
Of course, at that moment, Kirk is going to bust out the poker. He's like, it's not chess. It's not chess, Spock. It's poker.
For a minute, I thought he was going to say, it's not chess. It's checkers. Yeah. But I was like, wait a minute.
It's Chinese checkers. It's not chess, it's canasta.
Right. Oh, man.
Part cheesy.
Does canasta involve shaking like a maraca around?
I don't think so.
That's a...
You're thinking of a Yahtzee.
Oh.
Or some other bullshit.
I regret that I can find no other logical alternative.
List. Number Wait, eight. What's happening on this list?
Number eight.
Castanets.
Bones and Kirk argue over Bailey's status in Starfleet with 7 minutes left to live. That's what it was. 7 minutes left to live, and they're arguing over Starfleet status. Seems like, and I know we already talked about this, but like, it just seems like time and place. Like, that's not when you start arguing over some shit that possibly won't matter in 7 minutes.
Others might say that's precisely when you would argue.
I don't know who would possibly say that.
I might be one of those people.
You'd say, let's talk about some, like...
It could be a personality.
Let's trifle about some minute, irrelevant bullshit.
When you're when you're close to death and in a situation where you are feeling powerless to prevent your fate... you might grasp. No. I think it was not unusual for the human psychology to try to grasp onto the mundane.
No, that's when you just take off all your clothes and run around the room. That's what you do.
Look, which I think is
this is Starfleet.
I think that's an equally acceptable reaction. I just think maybe people would be surprised, but I'm guessing that many people reach out to the mundane in order to grasp some sense of control and normalcy in the face of certain death.
It could be part of their training.
And that could be part of their training.
Well, we see differently on this one.
We do.
Which is fair. And then this sort of sums up.
Fair enough.
Kirk is uncharacteristically getting fed up with both Bones and Spock. But then here's
like these guys.
And here's the
who
last.
Who hired these guys?
Here's
the pointy one and the round one.
Here's the last sort of thing that I found that was sort of like side interesting scene or dialogue. Mm. Is that during imminent destruction, they decided to have a coffee break. Baylock was on the screen. He goes, "We'll soon inform you of our decision regarding your vessel. And having permitted your primitive efforts to see my form, I trust it has pleased your curiosity. And now another demonstration of our superiority." And then, like,
it was
the yeoman brings out some fucking coffee. Yeah. And McCoy's like, "I thought the power was off in the galley." And then Rand is like, "I used a hand phaser and zap, hot coffee." You know, like, and like,
because she's smart.
But this is like directly after fucking, like, this is a line
my
after.
My boy's got to drink hot coffee.
This is right after Baylock's like, "We're going to fuck you up." And he's like, "How'd you get this coffee to work?"
Now, here's the thing. I get where you're going. Where I disagree with you, Dan,
I think you're being.
I'm not being
contradictory.
I'm not being contrary for the sake of being
contradictory.
I'm not being contradictory either, nor am I being contrary for the sake of being contrary. Neither of those things.
You're not
are
being
happening.
Ironical either.
No, I'm arguing a point, which is that at that particular spot in the timeline of the episode, I believe
spot.
That Kirk has already figured out that this guy's full of shit. Mm. As soon as the bluff worked, Kirk was like, "Oh, okay, they don't actually have what something's up here. They don't got shit. We don't need to be scared of these people." He figured it out.
I think the tensions
starting to go down at that point, because remember when Baylock is all like, "All right, we agree to your terms," and then Kirk is like, "Nah, fuck it, never mind."
Yeah.
And he shut off the communication, and then Baylock's all trying to call back and be like, "Oh well, as it happens, you know," and he's trying to keep up the ruse. He's trying to keep up the ruse, but Kirk has already seen through it and realized, like, we can fuck this guy up.
I thought it was pretty smooth how, even though the whole episode is called the Corbomite Maneuver, and this was actually a very small part of the episode in
it's
general.
It's the resolution.
He did play that really well when he was like...
"Let him sweat for a change."
And then and then he's like, "Bring him up ship to ship," and he says...
"Request denied."
And then he cuts it off like right away. That was smooth. Yeah. That was pretty badass. That was pretty awesome. So that part alone, like, was worth naming the episode after that. But it was like, arguably, did that... We don't know if that really did anything. Because, like, that alien wasn't going to hurt him anyways. Even though the alien...
At the end, he says that. And I guess we're meant to take it for face value.
But, I mean, it's like... He's like, "Oh, yeah, I was just testing you guys. That which is why I, like, crippled your ship. Why I blew up your recorder marker. Like, I actively destroyed your shit." And then they're just like, "Oh, this is cute, adorable, little..." Just wants to know
look
what we're like.
Guy.
Just wants to know what we're like. But we were going on... That's a little further down.
That is a little further
down. Let's go
line.
Down to... back to Bailey.
Mr. Bailey.
Understand this.
I like that this character's in the episode. I appreciate what they were doing with the character. They're showing somebody who's ostensibly a trained professional. He's got a little bit of bravado. When the shit hits the fan, he kind of freaks the fuck out.
Yeah.
He's like that Ferrell guy.
And
Will Ferrell?
Yes, like the Ferrell guy. I know who you're talking about.
Ferrell.
Will Lieutenant Ferrell?
Another Irish American.
Will Ferrell?
Crew member.
Spock's wasting time. Yes, everybody else just...
Sitting around?
The Irish caused some troubles on this show.
Real quick, just to let you know what I have on this, and we don't have to go through this, but I do have like 9 like Bailey sucks interactions.
Well, let's go through those quickly. But the long and the short of it is that what's cool about this character is they present him as like kind of a lame piece of shit, but a redemptive lame piece of shit.
What do they want from us?
And I like that this is. I'm not going to say it's super realistic necessarily, but it's certainly a more realistic portrayal of not only somebody freaking out within the military command structure, but then being forgiven for it and given another chance.
Let's find out what they want us
to
do.
They want us to lose our heads.
As opposed to being like, this guy, fuck this guy forever because he freaked out in front of everybody and embarrassed his ass. Like, he really fucking embarrassed himself.
He didn't even go to the brig. He just went to his quarters.
8 minutes left.
7 minutes and 45 seconds.
He's starting a countdown.
He didn't space him or anything.
He's starting a countdown.
What are you all out of your minds?
Y'all out of your fucking minds? There's a giant ball of light bulbs and it says we're going to die. What are you doing just sitting there? Oh my God, there's like 4 of the light bulbs just came off. And somehow that's going to be worse.
End of watch. It's the end of everything.
Everything.
What are you, robots?
Robots.
Wound up toy soldiers. Robots. Don't you know when you're dying? Watch and regulations and orders. What do they mean? Watch and regulations and orders. What do they mean?
Regulations and orders.
Regulations and orders.
Failure relief.
What do they mean?
Failure relief.
We're all laughing our asses off this, but I guarantee you, Gene Roddenberry and probably Gene Koons, like they heard this on the battlefield in World War II. Probably they probably saw some guy freak out before getting his brains blown out. So you know this stems from reality, but again, what makes it work is that. Yes, he's a piece of shit and annoying, but they've also given him an opportunity to redeem himself.
And they offered
a bit of a weird opportunity.
And they offered sort of a resolution to like how they finished their interaction with the character at the end by him, like, I guess being like, okay, yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Like, I'll do it.
But like now he's redeemed himself enough that he can be trusted to like.
And Kirk is basically like, hey, you want to learn about humans? Take this dumbass.
Yeah, I know. Like, they didn't say how long it was. They're just like, we'll drop this guy off.
Yeah, just hang out with this
motherfucker. There's no like paperwork or like, you know, he doesn't have to contact an admiral or something about this shit.
It turns out literally they have nothing but Tranya. All there is on offer. There's no food.
This is Tranya.
Yes.
Yeah, so I thought
Bailey.
It was kind of fucked up that he trusted that interaction. I mean, like I said, he just kind of pawned him off, but that was man, if I were Bailey, I would be pissed off by that.
Well, that's where...
Because just the last second, by the way, you're not coming off this ship.
That's where...
And we don't know anything about this fucking alien. I would not have touched that Tranya.
Yeah, but...
Like, how do they know...
That's in the scene. They have that in the scene where they're all feeling shady about it until Baylock
I know, but they still drink it. But the thing is Baylock, for all they know, is like trapped in a corner and he's trying to figure out how to win still and he wasn't actually benevolent.
No, I understand. Well, yeah, exactly. And hence this... A very important literary point, which is that TOS did this more than later iterations of Star Trek. Although later iterations,
Star Trek. It's not just a point; it's a literary.
It is a literary point.
It's very important
because Jesse is totally totally doesn't give a shit at this point.
I totally give a shit.
The literary point is that there's a lot in TOS of sort of mythological storytelling structures.
Yes.
And if not in the entire story, often in resolutions or often in key aspects of it. In this one, much of this story is mystery, sci-fi, military, psychological, professional, organizational management. There's all sorts of this stuff. But the conclusion they've just decided to use, we've met like a fairy creature and through a trial of misunderstandings, we are now, you're just taken for granted. It's like when you're reading the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves or something, it's just like, oh yeah. And then you do this and then you kiss the Cinderella and she wakes up and it's just taken to be fact, right?
This is Tranya.
Because you're trying to do it. a certain thing that relies on certain things just as a shortcut being taken as fact and not being questioned. However, because the rest of the story isn't structured that way, it stands out. It can be jarring, but it also happens a lot in TOS.
That was the literary point.
Yeah, robots. You're fucking robots and tin cup soldiers.
With it's the end of everything. Why robots?
Golf movie.
End of everything.
Let's find out what they want us
they
to
want
do.
They want us to lose our heads.
Okay, so he went from Bailey this.
What are you all out of your minds?
To Bailey this.
Me, sir, I'd like to volunteer.
He suddenly became like super smooth and sexy at
the end.
Well,
he was sexy the whole time. Even
I'll make plenty of mistakes.
Watching regulations and orders. What do they mean?
Bailey, you're really.
No, sir, I'm not.
Spock's wasting time.
I'll make plenty of mistakes.
8 minutes left.
7 minutes and 45 seconds.
He's doing a countdown.
Me, sir, I'd like to volunteer.
Watching regulations and orders. What do they mean?
No, sir, I'm not.
Okay.
Deflectors aren't stopping.
I think that's all the Bailey stuff, right? That wraps up all the Bailey stuff. Yeah, or was there some other?
Well, I had a list of interactions.
Oh, yeah, say the.
But
the
it's actually just like a bunch of quotes. I don't know how I can try to zip through it.
Well, can you do it in a way that's entertaining?
I'll try.
I'm sure you can.
So this is called nine ways Bailey sucks.
Okay.
So Bailey goes, he starts it off by saying, 3 days of this now, sir. Other ships must have made their star maps of some of this. You know, and Spock's like, negative. It's like, no, it's not too bad, but it's a little sassy.
He's whining about his gig. And Spock seems super into it.
Yeah, and Spock said, ahead slow, steer a course around it, Mr. Sulu. And Bailey's like, it's blocking the way. And then Spock's like, don't raise your voice, asshole.
You might have colored that a little bit subjectively.
Well, you told me to make it entertaining.
No, I'm just saying it's on your list, but like, I also was just like.
No, you're on his list.
Yeah, he was just explaining that it's blocking. It's blocking.
Okay, so, two reasons.
Well, there's it's blocking the way, and then there's like,
it's blocking the way. Well, he said it like this.
It's blocking the way.
And then Spock said, quite unnecessary to raise your voice. So he did say it.
Excuse me.
He did say it inappropriately.
All right, okay, I
Spock
get
says,
it.
When
I
the captain arrives, you'll expect a full report on, and then Bailey says, the cube's range and position, I'll have it by then.
Cube.
It means I have to be... Oh, yeah, then he goes, raising my voice back there doesn't mean I was scared or couldn't do my job. It means I happen to have a human thing called an adrenaline gland. Back talk.
Spock is all like, that sounds hugely inconvenient. Have you considered having it removed? But Bailey, that was the first sign. Like, when Bailey was like, just because I raised my voice doesn't mean I'm, like, lame. It's like... No, raising your voice doesn't mean you're lame. Saying what you just said now means you're lame.
Yeah.
Like saying you're not lame makes you lame, bro. Yeah. That's how that
most
works.
Inconvenient, however, and considered having it removed.
Nobody thought you were lame before. Spock. Right. Everyone just thought Spock was overreacting because Spock is. Everyone's like, yeah,
you should have just dropped it and moved on. He shouldn't have brought it
back.
But
he couldn't because he's an insecure lame-o.
Yeah.
And
even though he kind of can have a sexy like 60s voice when he wants to.
Yeah.
Me, sir, I'd like to volunteer.
Yeah. Bailey goes, sir.
He
might have still been on whatever drugs McCoy pumped him up with in his quarters.
Yeah, really.
Bailey goes, sir, we're going to just let it hold us here. We've got phaser weapons. I vote we
phaser
blast
weapons.
It. And Kirk's like, I'll keep that in mind, Mr. Bailey. When this becomes a democracy.
Worf in this episode is played by Bailey. Yeah.
Kirk says, I'll keep that in mind, Mr. Bailey, when this becomes a democracy. So even though. So Kirk thinks Bailey's getting a little bit too big for his britches, you know.
Yeah.
That was like a Worf thing to say. And then one time Kirk's like, it's time for action, gentlemen, Mr. Bailey. And Bailey goes, bridge to phaser gun crew. And Kirk's like, counterman, I'll select what kind of action. He goes, I'm sorry, sir. I thought you meant, are you explaining, Mr. Bailey? I haven't requested an explanation.
Right.
So Bailey is just like fucking up left and right here.
Yeah,
he's like not getting his shit together.
Counterman.
What was that?
That was when he said counterman.
Oh, counterman.
Counterman.
Because it doesn't say, like in context, you can understand what he's saying. But out of
counterman.
Counterman.
Sabotage.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes when I record short clips of things, I try to leave some dead space at the beginning and end because it doesn't sound as awkward that way. Number five. Bailey's not implementing the commands the captain was issuing. When Spock's like, we can only take a few more seconds of this, Kirk's like, lock phasers on target. And then he's like, Mr. Bailey, lock phasers on target. And then Sulu has to like... Well, then Bailey, like, waits a second. And then the next time it happens four times. The next time, Kirk is like, reduce image. Let's see all of it. And then Sulu has to, like...
He has to keep coming
over and switching toggling on. It was a third time.
Trying to help you out, brother.
Third time says Mr. Bailey dispatch marker, and then he's like finally like Mr. Bailey, and then he's like, oh, and then again
Mr. Bailey's the savings and loan.
And then he says, laying a course ahead, Mr. Bailey, and he's like, what, a course? Like he's like just totally not with it. But then, and then Spock
throwing some of that hippie grass.
And you know what caused Bailey to what caused Bailey to finally fall apart was when Spock said,
I was curious to see how they appeared.
That was the moment that Bailey lost his shit. He was, I think that's what he said. What did he say? He said, what did he say? I have it somewhere.
He said, citizen.
He said, I think he said this.
I don't understand this. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Spock, of course, mentioning what they quote unquote looked like.
I thought it was interesting that Spock, of all people, was curious what they looked like. Because he even was like,
Spock is always into that
shit. He was even a little sheepish in that part, too. He's like, I was just curious what they looked like.
He's always curious. And
I thought Vulcans, I thought, weren't interested in exploring like things.
No, T'Pol,
in an episode, was straight up like, Archer was like, let's go explore that beacon or whatever. And she's like, we don't know about that. It's irrelevant to explore these things.
The Vulcans like exploring. They don't give a shit about like the wayward space stations and moons and stuff.
I mean, everyone,
there's specific things they're into.
I mean, everyone likes exploring. I just figured it seemed like Earthlings like to explore a little bit more.
The gag has always been that humans explore every fucking nook and cranny, and everyone else thinks that's crazy. Like, they each have their priorities.
So then, it just goes to show though that they may not be. It's just, that's why it's funny to me that Spock seemed curious about how he looked, because it's just like, doesn't really change anything.
Well, and what he was looking at was the famous alien face that's like in the credits that scares everybody as a child.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know?
I was also just going to say, before we get to that, is that also Kirk was the one who wanted to explore the actual ship, and Spock was like, we should kill these motherfuckers. So,
let's get the fuck out. He was like, why, you want to go back to that place?
So he was curious. Curious what they look like, but he was not curious enough to explore their ship.
But also, again, by that point in the episode, Kirk had already figured out that the Baylock was full of shit. He had already figured that out.
Well, Spock was the only one who gave a shit what Baylock looked like. But yes, you're right.
That's the alien from the credits. And of course, we see the alien finally again in Lower Decks. There's a great gag with the same type of alien. Dummy slash.
And as fucking terrifying as that alien was, nothing could have prepared me for Baylock's true form. Like that shit, I don't know if that shit creeped you guys out at all.
Oh yes,
but and not only that, the eyebrows.
Hold that for a second, because we do have to take a break, and we need to talk. Have a fulsome discussion about Clint Howard's portrayal of Baylock, as well as Clint Howard's portrayal of other characters. What we have to pick, which is our favorite portrayal or favorite character from Clint Howard in Star Trek and beyond, because of course he shows up in all sorts of stuff, and we still have some of those musical cues to talk about. So we will get to all of that when we return from this here break.
End of watch. It's the end of everything.
Hey, everybody, we've returned from our break.
What, already? How is that even possible?
Oh, it's just a thing we do. We go away and then we come back.
That's weird.
You start the tape,
Dan,
and you stop the tape.
Do you want to barrel right into the old Baylock Clint Howard talk, or would you want to take a very brief detour into some musical cue party fun time action? I can play my favorite musical cue, and then you can see if you've got that musical cue too, and then I know that you've got a couple other musical cues. I was just thinking maybe it'd be fun to listen to a musical cue. What do you think?
Probably both.
Okay, let me play. I've got two versions of this. I've got sort of a...
You have been examined.
Me too.
And found wanting.
I've got a couple musical.
Okay, well, I'll play these two clips. The first one's a short one that's sort of like.
Is this from Patty Clips?
Patty Clips.
It's Patty
Patio Clips.
It's Patty Eclipse.
Patty Eclipse was when I visited Ohio and looked up at the sun and there was a giant hole in the sky.
Are you Jesse Nuts? Jesse Nuts.
You guys are silly.
Yeah, from now on, it'll be spelled with G-N-U-T-Z. Jenny Nuts. Jesse Nuts.
Jenny. Let's go ahead and start calling him Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Jenny Nuts.
Okay. So I've got the short clip, and then I've got like a longer version from a different part of the episode.
Like a Danny Long clip. Because
this is a musical
cue. But first, the trend.
This is a musical cue that comes up frequently in Star Trek. They've even hinted at it in Star Trek 3 and in some of the modern series.
We talked about that one.
Is it the one that went...
I mean, that's a good one. People can't see what you're doing with your arms.
Like you're doing a Beavis thing.
Well, I was going to say sort of like a vigorous cross-country motion.
Yeah. Like, it's, kinda like, it's like when Beavis goes, fire.
I was thinking it was a little Beavis-y, but okay.
But it was more alternating and not all right, like let me, in unison.
Let me just play the fucking music and then you can listen to it and then we can talk about it. All right, here we go. That bit, the trilly, the scales, right?
That was nice. That's
yeah, right. I like the trillies. Well,
and here's the longer version where it goes in and out in a few different variations. Extreme, yes. And then up here, up over here.
Where?
Right up here. Octave.
Engage.
And then what happens at the end? Deep, the cellos come back.
It's like some Sufi.
Yeah,
some Sufi
scales
music.
Up and down. I love when that comes up in Star Trek TOS and totally, other. Yeah.
Well, you probably have more, but I'm gonna play one.
No, that's it. That's all I've got. Okay. That's all I've got.
I played the two Scary Cube music. Now this is the Bubble Sphere music.
Bubble.
It's a variation sort of on the script. This is when it zooms in. That's all I got. That's all right.
What's that instrument in the background?
Fascinating.
It sounds like
it's like a xylophone.
Yeah, but yeah. I wasn't like, is it a xylophone or is it one of those crazy ass xylophone variations like a fucking marimba? It's not a marimba.
It's too high up. It's either a xylophone or it's like a it's like tempo block.
Maybe like a muted xylophone.
Yeah, I think it's more like a xylophone, like way up high on a xylophone.
On Xylophone Avenue.
It would block.
Oh God.
Oh.
It would block. Oh,
tempo block. I said.
Dan brings this.
What, how do drummers communicate, Jesse?
Yes, it's always great when you tell the punchline before the fucking setup.
No, this isn't the punchline.
Gave the punchline, and now you're giving the setup.
Well, here's a different joke. Because you guys have heard it. Nobody out there has heard it.
Okay.
How does a drummer communicate, Jesse? You give up? Through symbols.
Yeah. Through symbols.
Right. Okay. What does a drummer do when someone tries to punch him?
He would block.
Yeah.
Huh? Okay. Huh?
Yeah, no, I get it.
What do you call a waffle that burps too much?
What was the one about just press pound?
No, we're not doing that. That was a terrible mistake. That was like when Bobby put capers on his fruit pie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to talk about that.
Bobby Hill. He used to tell these jokes during shows when I had to like change a string or something.
Oh yeah, Dan would tell these jokes to the audience
before,
yeah.
Like to warm up the audience before
warm
we play.
Up the audience, yeah, right? You're right.
One time somebody was like, "Fuck this."
What do you call a waffle that burps too much? A Belchin waffle.
Yeah.
Okay, now I've told those jokes, and Patrick's like, "You read those in a funny book." And like, I was like, "No, I didn't."
And jokes for blokes.
I did not. Okay, so the bubble sphere is great. That's one of my favorite shots in like, it ranks up there in all of Star Trek. Yeah. I think when that, because the shit
it's
was
pretty,
like,
pretty wild.
I like when he was like, "It's a mile wide," and Bailey was like, "It's 5,000 meters away. It's still taking up the whole screen." And
you
like,
you gotta zoom out, man.
But things like that make me want to watch the original, like non-remastered one with the original effects, because I'm really curious what that looked like. Because
it's a shittier version of that, but it looks like a big ball of light bulbs.
It was cool. It did a great job of showing perspective, like making this ball look enormous. Even though you could tell they were models, it didn't matter. It did a great job of how it zoomed right in on up to make it look
right
like,
on it, but up in there.
It made it look like it was far away when it was small, and it was believable that it was right up next to it when it was big. Like it just, I thought it was a fantastic effect, and the music was really, really scary. There's
the
scary.
Music is great.
Speaking of scary, scary alien
scary,
music.
Scary
alien music.
Scary.
Time and effort.
I have one more, and it's just called Bad Bailey.
Escort him to his quarters, Doctor.
Oh, yeah, I remember why I like that, because if you listen closely to the beginning part, the instrument's going up, like, sort of almost sounding like, almost, it sounds a little cacophonous.
Is it sort of like a, is it sort of like
sarcophagus?
A...
sarcophagus?
Is it like like in Psycho or something, where it's like, it's tension from the music because it's like off-kilter?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's like both, a half-step off or something?
Yeah, it's off-kilter in both, pitch and rhythm.
And yaw?
I'll play it a couple times. It's really small. It's just the beginning part. Okay. Take two.
All right.
I can't hear it anymore.
Okay. See that?
Yeah. It's very. It's like Baz Luhrmann. Was it Baz Luhrmann in a Psycho? No. In like a Vertigo. Didn't you do Vertigo?
I don't know. I was just like
maybe
how
not
the
Baz Luhrmann,
how the windy sounding instruments are all going like do like all like almost randomly sounding.
Oh, yeah. I hate when I get old and can't remember names.
Wait. Hold on. Gotta hear the music.
Okay. Great.
You see what I'm talking about, Jesse? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was. I don't know. I like that little.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Great.
And they still had bridge noises going.
Yeah, the whole time.
Tweeting away.
Thank you for highlighting that. I think it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We must drink.
Chanya! That's a good segue into our discussion of Clint Howard and his portrayal.
And the baby Baylock who looked like a baby that had like eyebrows, but they weren't just normal eyebrows. They were long eyebrows. They weren't bushy eyebrows.
But I forget, did you like that?
They were eyelash eyebrows.
Did you like that?
They took giant eyelashes and put them on a baby's eyebrow. It was fucked up.
He wasn't a baby. He was like 7 or something.
No, he was not 7.
Well, yeah, something like that.
No, he was born in 1959. This was filmed in 1966, so he would have been 6 or 7, depending on.
Really? It was just the voice. The voice paired with this kid. Like, it was like
Ron,
so.
Little Ronnie
there was,
Howard's
there was,
brother.
There was so much like dissonance between the visual and the audio. Okay. This is what I'm talking about. There's so much dissonance between the audio and the visual that it like the whole thing was really unnerving for me.
Well, that's not his voice, yeah.
Well, I know that. But so when you look at IMDb, mm-hmm. first of all, there's no one listed for the person who played Baby Baylock physical.
Yeah, because no, that was Clint Howard.
Well, it says Clint Howard for Baylock, but then it also says Walker Edmiston, who is I'm guessing the dummy Baylock. But then there's another one that says Ted Cassidy played Baylock's puppet. And the Baylock's puppet must have been the dummy. So when it says voice of Baylock Walker Edmiston, who is that? No, that's Ted Cassidy, Baylock's puppet.
I don't believe so.
Are you just answering your question? I don't know what you guys are talking about.
So, okay.
I think it's Walker Edmiston is the
I'll
voice.
I'll explain this as most...
This is an example where more information may be less helpful.
Okay, I will say this as succinctly as I can.
Excellent.
Under Baylock and IMDb, there are 3 actors represented.
Got it.
One, and none of them are the one who played the physical form of little Baylock, the real Baylock. Well, we have number one, Clint Howard as voice of little Baylock, real Baylock.
No, he's not the voice. He played Baylock. He's the physical Baylock.
Yeah, he's not the...
Oh, he's the physical Baylock?
Yeah, what do you think we're talking about? Clint Howard is the physical Baylock.
He is actually the physical Baylock?
Clint Howard was six or seven years old at the time. He was the younger brother
Little
Ronnie Howard.
Oh, so Walker Edmiston must have been the voice...
The voice.
That's why I figured you answered your own question.
He was the voice of Clint Howard Baylock, and then Ted Cassidy was the Baylock. Okay, that makes sense. That's what I'm saying.
I'm surprised you didn't recognize him, because he looks exactly like fucking Clint Howard. Clint Howard always looks like Clint Howard. But I agree with you, Dan. It was it's a disturbing portrayal, but that's because Clint Howard's good. He was even as a kid, like he was good at evoking this ethereal, otherworldly horribleness. So let's quickly go through all the Clint Howard appearances in Star Trek, because he's been in a lot of Star Trek. So they just didn't
care that this baby destroyed a bunch of their shit, and they even thought it was cute. They were, you see, Kirk was,
he's not
smile.
A baby. He's like an old man alien who looks
that to differentiate
toddler.
It from the scary alien monster.
Well, that's
twist. You know what I'm talking about. The point being is that Kirk,
the mythological
is,
twist.
The point that's ridiculous is how Kirk thinks it's like hilarious and cute when they fucking threaten.
It's like the Wizard of Oz. You meet the wizard. He's just some guy.
And even if they weren't, even if he wasn't actually going to blow the ship up, he broke some of the ship's shit. He broke their recorder marker.
We just discussed this. It's incongruent.
It's not incongruent because Kirk's just like, so what?
No, that's why it's incongruent.
Yeah,
it's incongruent because all this bad stuff happened, but then it has this tacked on mythological ending.
I know it's incongruent. I'm saying we haven't talked. It's not something we mentioned specifically before.
Okay. I thought we did.
We did mention it often.
I'm glad we have.
No, I brought it up and you were like, no, we got to wait on that.
Okay, I get you. All right.
Your face.
So Clint Howard, of course, played Baylock.
I feel so dumb. I thought that was the voice. The guy was like, there's no way that's actually Clint Howard.
In the Corbomite maneuver.
Ron Howard was much older than Clint Howard.
Ron Howard was like six, I think, in 1960 when he started filming the first season of Andy Griffith. Andy Griffith was filmed in 1960. The first season of Andy Griffith was 1960. Ron Howard was like six or something when he filmed that, which would make him born like 1954. Clint Howard was born 1959.
Yeah.
So by the time this was, he's 5 years younger than Ron.
Yeah, he's
Ron
a lot.
Howard.
That's a lot of years older than your sibling.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. My sisters are 10 and 12 years older.
Yeah,
than
that's a pretty big gap. My older.
I mean, yeah, that's a big gap. For me, 5 years is not a big gap.
My older brother is 3 years, which is a small gap. My younger brother is 10 years, which is a larger gap.
Yeah.
That's how math works.
I'm slightly less than 3 years older than my sister.
We've done a very good job with numbers this episode. But
hearing frequency, sir.
But we're still going through the list.
So the man.
I've got lists too, Dan. You're not the only motherfucker with lists.
Was he on
Jesus fucking Christ.
What is going on with that thing?
Sorry, I can't always control which ones are going to like pierce.
Yeah, okay.
You can.
Jesse, you were saying.
No, it's just the bosun whistle is very, very piercing by nature.
I mean, we know that now.
Even if it's the same volume.
Okay. I'm going to get a fucking real one and toot it and fucking.
He's going to sneak up on your ass.
Dude.
You were saying something, Jesse?
Was he, was he in Discovery or Picard or something?
Yeah.
He was in a recent Star
Trek.
Okay,
so we'll go through it in order. So Baylock, and then he next played Grady in Deep Space Nine in Past Tense Part 2, where he played like a sort of a cracked out guy living in one of the, he was the...
That's right.
One of those guys. He was all like...
Oh, man.
He was in The Ice Cream Man.
No, let's just do Star Trek. We'll get to his IMDb in a second.
Oh, so, Patrick has decreed.
Well, you had two fucking lists of 10.
Okay, I relent.
This is a much shorter list. It's taking way longer to
get
through.
Yeah, doesn't that frustrating when something really short takes a long time?
No,
unnecessarily.
Not if it's funny. Not if it's funny. But you're just.
You guys are the master of taking a 10 word sentence, making that take 5 literal minutes to through.
What do you think a podcast is? That's what a podcast is you take a very thin concept and you stretch that
out. Yes, but there are balances.
Stretch
media,
it out.
But
baby.
There's limits. There's limits and balances to be had. It's not just like everyone, it's not like a competition to see how long it can take to say 5 words.
The sky's the limit.
So you got Baylock.
I'll disguise your limit.
Oh.
Baylock in DOS, Grady in Deep Space Nine. Then he played Mook. In Enterprise, in Acquisition, which was he was a Ferengi.
Word.
That was the one Ferengi episode of Enterprise. So he plays a Clint Howard Ferengi.
I think he'll cut.
But he still looks like Clint Howard. Then on Discovery in Will You Take My Hand, he played a creepy Orion. They went into some bar, some underworld place. Yeah, he was like a drug/sex dealer, slave dealer. I don't know. But he was a creepy Orion. And then we saw him most recently on Strange New Worlds, Under the Cloak of War, Buck Martinez. That was the episode where they're at like the triage hospital and where you know they you know, there's all sorts of horrible no spoilers, but a bunch of bad shit's going down, and he is the head doctor.
Flypaper.
Yeah. So that's his Star Trek stuff. Do you all have a favorite Clint Howard appearance on Star Trek? And Dan, you can now incorporate the fact that now you realize that he played Baylock.
Baylock was pretty good.
Baylock's pretty good. Although I imagine I don't
remember him as a Ferengi, but I imagine he makes a pretty good Ferengi.
I remember him as Grady.
I don't think I've seen those.
It's one of those roles, like in Past Tense Part Two, which
I saw that one.
Did we see that
because of my algorithm? It's always that recommending.
No,
it
was pre-algorithm.
It was pretty early.
My algorithm is always recommending that thing. I recommended it recently.
That's in the first 100 episodes.
Past Tense Part Two.
But I remember him as Grady. That's one that jumps out. Although Buck Martinez was very, very memorable as well. That's just more recent.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, according to Memory Alpha, Howard now holds the record for the longest time between his first and most recent appearances on Star Trek. Currently nearly 57 years.
For real.
So 57 years between him playing Blaylock and him playing Buck Martinez last year.
Blaylock? You mean like Jolene Blaylock?
Jesus Christ. Baylock, not Jolene Blaylock.
Baylock. Isn't that how you say friend?
He's holding your feet to the fire.
Bilbo Baggins.
I don't understand this.
Bilbo.
Okay.
So
our favorite Star Trek or our favorite non-Star Trek?
Well, favorite Star Trek, if you want to pop one out there, and then we can go to the non-Star Trek one.
I don't really have a favorite.
I don't remember him in most of the Star Treks. I'd have to see him again.
Wow. What about...
Very unexciting.
Maybe you remembered him now. Of course, he has a tremendous and long...
holograms.
IMDb page. He's done a lot of work over the years, but some things that jumped out at me as things that I remember him strongly from are...
Johnny Bark.
Well, yes, Johnny Bark in Arrested Development, the Apollo technician in Apollo 13.
He played the Ice Cream Man in the horror movie Ice Cream Man.
Totally. I don't remember in that. I remember him as Paco in The Waterboy.
On the cover of Ice Cream Man, he's holding a giant waffle cone with a human head on it.
Okay, I remember the cover. I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
It's not good.
He did play the radar technician in all three Austin Powers movies. Remember where it's like, sir, it's like a giant Bob's big boy penis or whatever?
Yeah.
I forget exactly what the joke was. Mm-hmm. He played the smog strangler in Seinfeld's the trip two-parter where like they go to L.A.
Yeah,
do you remember where like Seinfeld has to go to like L.A. and then like Kramer's in L.A. and they think he's like a serial killer and it turns out it's this Clint Howard guy?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
Totally.
I remember that.
Those are the ones that jumped out at me.
It was a two-part.
But he has a big illustrious career. I don't know if there were any things that jumped out at you, Clint Howard style.
I mean, he's the kind of actor that, because he's in so much random shit, I can't really, like, I've seen him around, but I can't name, like, most shit he's in.
So if you don't want to talk about Clint Howard, would you rather talk about, like, maneuvers? There's the Corbomite maneuver.
Maneuvers.
The Picard maneuver. The Riker maneuver.
Janeway maneuver.
Well, that's the Janeway protocol. Where she like kills everybody.
Is Picard maneuver the one where he pulls his shirt down?
Yes. And also where he makes the ship look like it's two places at once.
Oh, right.
Because it's one of those rare instances when physics matters, but it doesn't usually matter. Mm-hmm. Doesn't usually matter. Mm-hmm. But like in that instance, somehow physics matters and it tricks people.
Speaking of physics, I thought it was funny how they had to like bend over like some jerk when they got transported.
The beaming while crouching.
I'm hoping that it has a safeguard in there that says if there's matter you're transporting into, we won't transport you. Because it's like
one would presume.
Because like Scotty was just like bend down a little bit. It wasn't exactly precise. So they were just like, oh, this much? And he's like, yeah, I guess. And it's like, hope you don't get fucked up.
maybe Scotty was just drunk off his ass and he didn't know what the fuck was going on. He could have totally beamed them into a different part.
Because what did he want? Like 2 liters of...
Tranya
of whiskey or something that
that one time
yeah.
I liked how at the end when they like he was showing him around their ship that involved like going behind
half
the scenery
a liter
half, it was they were like going behind the scenery like in order to explore the ship like you could see it was like you were back there and you're like oh, that's like back by the curtain it was fun, it was kind of goofy.
I liked the part where everyone was like super about having their own little private collection of 3.5 inch floppies. Remember when they were having their like the department has. Oh, by the way,
yeah, everybody like picked up their like little cards.
Yeah, their little stack of
cassettes and like left.
Yeah, a little stack of discs. And what was cool in this episode, and they've done this a few times before, but I think this was like particularly explicit, where Kirk is like, call all the department heads, and he goes department by department. He's like life sciences, you know, engineering, etc. He goes through, and so you got like a really clear understanding of who was the head of what department and in charge of what, which I liked. I enjoy seeing that type of stuff.
8 minutes left.
Oh, just letting you know.
Okay.
In the podcast.
That's clever.
That is clever, isn't it?
Dan was waiting the entire fucking podcast to do that.
He was watching the clock.
I give you credit. I give you credit. Well done, Dan.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. There was a lot of command giving in dialogue in this episode, too. Like when Spock goes, sound the alarm. Sulu's like, it's slowing down, Mr. Spock. And he's like, countermand alarm. All engines, full stop. Visual. Like they went through the time in the dialogue for Spock to say, red alert, right. And then to counterman, red alert. Like when they could have just cut that out entirely, I like that it was in there because it felt like all procedural. By the way, they said counterman twice in this episode. Spock said it once.
It was like a submarine thing.
Yeah. Kirk, and then Kirk gives a review at the end of their thing. He's like, Bailey, you're sluggish on the command issuing. Oh, I just whistled. And then that whole
Would
thing
you like some wood.
And then now he sent him
he's
all
saying he's like the beaver.
He sent them all to like training. And Jesse, you pointed out earlier how he was commenting on it was 94 and stuff. Yeah, it was very procedural. There's all this extra sort of stuff going on.
I dug it.
Like contacting the different.
I have a competency fetish.
Like,
I love it.
TOS like takes more time to like contact each like crew department more.
Well, and they also have explicit in TOS, which sort of goes away in the future, where they have in multiple episodes of TOS, when they're firing phasers,
they
it's like
gun crews.
It's like on an it's like on a naval ship where the command is being, you're pushing a button, but that sends the command to a whole crew of people who are operating the machinery. You're not actually firing the phasers with the button. Whereas later on in TOS movies and in TNG, etc., certainly the impression you get is that the Worf person pushing the button is, Worf or whoever is pushing the button is actually firing the weapon.
Right.
Operating the weapon.
There was some interesting shots at the beginning. Like, was at the beginning.
Early TOS style.
It was awesome. They zoomed out. Like over top of him in this weird angle thing, and then they zoomed in onto Bailey's console, like
clicking a button.
It was, and then there was an interesting shot
when it was totally not necessary to do that.
No, it wasn't. There was another shot where it was from behind Kirk's POV, like when he was leaving the lift out into the bridge. Mm-hmm. There was another shot where it was clearly focused on Kirk's butt when he was walking away. There was one moment.
You were looking
where Kirk actually laid his hand on Bailey's. It was 18 minutes in. He was like, I don't know if he was comforting him or what he was doing there, but. I also briefly wanted to mention the two laugh, the weird laugh, uncomfortable laughter part of Baylock when Bones goes like, and your crew. That kind of made sense because he's like, oh, silly you. I don't have a crew. It's just me. But then the next laugh was a little bit more, little more of like a non sequitur. Kirk goes, you'd find out more about us that way. And I'd get a better officer in return. Like the
he was laughing because he was like, no, I'm gonna eat this guy.
Yeah, right.
I'm totally gonna fucking eat this guy.
Right. They're just letting him off on this, just letting him off on this alien ship for him to live for the next few months. I don't know. Patrick, you mentioned, do we want to talk more about Clint Howard, or you brought up another subject?
No, not really.
Oh. Well, okay, how about this then? Spock had these two moments where he pronounced words weird. He said right here.
Words weird.
This is
weird
called
wood.
This is called words
weird.
This is called words weird.
Spock here.
Isn't that Spock weird?
Yeah, that was a little
Spock
weird.
Spock here.
You're right.
Spock here.
I didn't notice that. That's wild.
And then he says,
no answer from the cube.
No answer from the cube.
Spock here. No answer from the cube.
That's weird, right?
Yeah, maybe there was something wrong with him that day.
And then, to a lesser extent,
stand by to photograph.
I just like the cadence
stand
on that.
Stand by to photograph.
Stand by to photograph.
Stand by to photograph.
No answer from the cube. Spock here.
I found to drink your blood.
And then this one.
Deflectors, full intensity.
Deflectors.
Those two are less weird. The more weird ones were those for him. And here's a question of how do you, the consistent pronunciation of Baylock. I'll get it from the crew first. Okay. So here's from Kirk.
Commander Balak.
Balak.
Spock says.
I regret not having learned more about this Balak.
Balak.
Uhura says.
It's very weak. It's Balak.
Balak.
Baylock.
Now here's Baylock.
Spalik's message was heard all over the ship.
McCoy. Sorry, that was McCoy.
Spalik's message was heard all over the ship.
Now here's the real Baylock, or actually the fake Baylock.
This is Baylock, commander of the flagship Vesarius of the First Federation.
He clearly says Baylock.
And then this is the real Baylock.
I'm Baylock. So, welcome aboard.
So both real and dummy Baylock say it like Baylock, yeah, but everyone else is like,
Commander Balak.
Everyone else says Balak for some reason.
Yeah, maybe they're
and it's weird that the
assholes.
It's weird that the crew is totally in sync with how they pronounce it, and then the two Baylocks were totally in sync with each other, but not these between the crew and the Baylocks.
Directed on different days.
Yeah, I think so.
And the writer was in the room on one of them and not on the other.
Right, yeah, so they also said buoy. They always say buoy weird in Star Trek.
Having ignored a warning buoy and having then destroyed it.
Some people say boy.
The warning nature of your space buoy was unknown to us.
Those people live in Bowie, Maryland.
Yeah.
They eat French's fried chicken.
It's just a crazy idea.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I've always said buoy.
I'm
not joking, Lee.
I liked that, I didn't write down the whole quote, but the whole thing Kirk was saying about nothing's truly unknown. It's just temporarily hidden.
Yeah, I like that.
Temporarily not understood. Totally. I really like that. And I also like where he said, like, the greatest danger is ourselves. He's basically saying, like, don't freak out, motherfucker.
Yeah, here's the line. It says, you know, the greatest danger facing us is ourselves, an irrational fear of the unknown. But there's no such thing as the unknown, only things temporarily hidden, temporarily not understood. That's pretty cool.
That's a nice philosophy. I mean, there are undercurrents of neoliberal colonialism because it sort of implies a right to go digging around and finding out whatever, you know, exploring the dilithium mines.
But it's Star Trek,
of every planet.
So it does it
but,
in a good way.
But yes, acknowledging that undercurrent, otherwise I think it's a nice philosophy.
In some manner, he was reminiscent of my father.
All right. That part was like really, I didn't quite get where they were going with that one.
Who knows? Because we hadn't met Spock's dad at this point.
Yeah.
And he actually implies in that line that his mom and dad are dead. Mm. He sort of talks about them in the past tense. So
past tense, part two.
Yeah, exactly. Any final points? Because we need to close down this podcast and get ready for next week.
I wanted to say one.
Did you want to say one more thing?
I wanted to say
one more thing.
One more thing.
Can you say it in your one voice?
Is my mother dead?
No, that's not really what I wanted to say. But I did want to say that. Okay. Kirk's Corbomite maneuver was essentially like casting deflection on Magic: The Gathering. It was like if you cause us damage, we zap back and cause you damage.
Zap
like,
back.
Like, who's going to believe back. That? But it was a noble effort. When Sulu started counting down from 11, for some reason 11, the clock had actually just hit 10. He didn't do it right.
Classic production error. What do you gonna do?
If anyone's interested, 30 seconds.
You have been examined. All right, this episode has been examined.
You have been examined.
And we hope that you have enjoyed our examination of the Corbomite maneuver.
11, 10 seconds, 9. 8.
I was like, we're just going to hear the whole countdown. So that's going to do it for us this week.
That's my report.
We don't know what we're talking about next week, right?
Don't worry about it.
So check our social media feed. We'll figure it out. ASAP.
Dan's going to tell us.
Yeah, because we're recording a little early because of a local holiday.
It was a pleasure testing you.
Local holiday.
Follow social media at It's Got Star Trek, Twitter, Facebook, Mastodon, Blue Sky, Threads, all of them. We're most of those places at It's Got Star Trek.
Flippity
follow
flurbs.
Us there. You can find out what we're going to discuss next week.
Slippity
you can also go to our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com.
What?
And one cool thing about the website is you can sort by series. If you just want to look at Deep Space Nine or just look at TOS, you can click a button and it'll only show the episodes of our podcast.
I forget which ones we've done and
where
I
we
have
discuss
to look
it.
It up sometimes.
Yeah, it's really convenient. So itsgotstartrek.com. Want to send us a voicemail?
In your culture, he would be Mr. Hyde to my Jekyll.
Tranya.
but first...
the Tranya.
If you want to send us a voicemail, it's got StarTrek.com/record.
You must admit he's effective.
If you want to go to our Patreon, give us money, delicious money, for some free bonus content, go to Patreon.
I have no crew, Doctor.
Patreon.com/It's Got Star Trek.
You would never have been frightened by me.
Emails go to feedback@It'sGotStarTrek.com.
Welcome aboard.
Okay. YouTube.
This is Tranya.
I think we said all the bits. So that's it for this week. We will talk to you about something related to Star Trek, probably, or fried green tomatoes, or Columbo next week.
Smell you later.
Talk to you then. Bye bye.
11. 10 seconds. 9. 8.
The whole thing.
7.
You can cut it if you
6.
Want.
No, I'm not going to do that.
5. 4.
It would be dishonorable.
3.
You gotta,
1.
The whole thing. It ends right here.
It was a pleasure testing you.
Oh. You tested me indeed, Dan.
Dirty little monster.
Dirty little monster. That's fucked up.
Raising my voice back there doesn't mean I was scared. I couldn't do my job. It means I happen to have a human thing called an adrenaline gland. Mm-hmm.
Does sound most inconvenient, however. Have you considered having it removed?
Very funny.
Try to cross brains with Spock. It'll cut you to pieces every time.